So first, let's start with the magic 9 billion number. How many are we going to be? Well, the 9 billion is actually a medium scenario of the UN. They also have a low scenario, which would be just above 7 billion, which is about the number of people that live on Earth today. And the high scenario goes for 2050 at almost 11 billion. Since the theme of those 2 days has been sustainability, my strong belief is depending on how sustainable or not we are, we're probably going to move up or down. Another chart that's really interesting that's based on data from the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development is the share of the middle class in different regions of the world. And it's really interesting to see over the period 2000-2050, the change is coming. Until 2000, pretty much most of the consumption was in developed countries, and mostly the US, Europe, and Japan. And when you go towards 2050, what you see is a complete change. The US in 2000 is 5% of the world population consuming about 25%. In 2050, it'll be 4% of the population consuming about 4%. So that's complete change. And by 2030, the estimate is that the middle class of India and China combined will represent about 45% of the world middle class. So there's going to be a whole lot more people with money to spend to buy food and other consumption goods, and that's going to change also the situation of supply and demand. So in the food area, I think it's really interesting to see. We talked about the change of diet already. That's already going on. And that also explains why there is so much pressure on agricultural markets. And what we need to compare here is what it is about, what are the needs and what are the wants. If we look at the population of 9 billion people, but in terms of nutritional needs, that's not the same as 9 billion people consuming what they want to consume. And just to give you an idea about the Chinese, if the Chinese want to eat more meat, and that's what they're doing, that's going to have a huge impact. Today, the Chinese consume about 120 pounds per capita per year. And the expectation is by 2030, I'm not talking even 2050 here, 2030, that it would pass 180 pounds. So if you look per species, what it means in terms of production, if every Chinese were to consume 10 kilo more per year of chicken, so 22 pounds, that means an additional production of chicken meat, the equivalent of today's U.S. production of chicken. Just 10 kilo per person per year. For pork, that would be 5 times the current Iowa production of pigs. And for beef, if the Chinese want to eat 10 kilo more every year individually, that represents 125 of the current U.S. beef production that has to come on top of what we already produce in the world. So we are talking huge numbers. There's 1.5 billion people all of a sudden eating more. That's going to represent a lot of meat. So wants and needs of 9 billion people, as I was mentioning, and it's really interesting to look at what are the nutritional needs, what does a person really need to live? And according to the FAO, an average person needs 1,800 calories a day. If we were to stick to this, if we're all very rational and eating a very healthy diet, today we produce more than enough calories to feed 9 billion people already. We also produce enough protein to cover the needs in protein. But people want to eat what they want to eat, and I don't think there is anybody in this room who ever calculates the number of calories of their meal every day and makes decisions based on rational data. And one of the expectations would be that the emerging country is also going to grow towards a Western diet. So if the whole world, if all those 9 billion people were to consume the current Western diet of 3,500 calories a day, actually, in terms of nutritional needs, that represent the nutritional needs of 17.5 billion. So when we say feeding 9 billion people, what are we really talking about here? Yeah. Meat production, if they wanted to eat 100 kilos per year, like the average in the Western diet, it would be almost a tripling of meat production, 2.8 roughly. If it was the American consumption of meat, it's 3.25. So you have to multiply meat production by more than 3. So the challenge is really about meeting the wants. It's almost a luxury problem, if you want. People don't need to eat that much, but they might want to. So it's not so much about the needs, but really the wants. And so I think when we talk about sustainability of and food security in the future, we really have to also look at the consumption patterns. It's not just a production issue, but it's also, well, how do we want to eat and what do we want to eat. So looking more on the U.S. side of agriculture, so what's coming in the future? And well, many challenges coming. More demand means for crop farmers, basically they need to have the ability to meet the demand for animal feed and also for biofuel. That's really where it is. The consumption of staple foods is not going to increase all that much. You know, rice and wheat is going to increase because the population increases, but per capita is not going to be all that much. It's really all in the animal protein that there's going to be something very challenging. There are two possible scenarios. The farmers, they do a great job. They're able to meet the demand. Life is good. We can eat all we want, and the farmers can do it, and it's sustainable. That's great. Second scenario, I think more likely, at least at some periods, the farmer is not going to be able to keep up because the increase in demand of meat goes much faster, I think, than they're able to increase their yields. So then the markets are going to become exciting. We can be sure of that. And what's going to really happen? And we've seen that over the last couple of years. So more demand for meat means more demand for animal feed. More demand for animal feed means more demand for crops. And since that goes faster than the crop farmers were planning, you see the price of crops going up. And the meat producers see also their cost of feed increase, because the cost of feed in total of the cost of producing meat is about 70%. So that weighs very, very heavily. And unfortunately, meat producers are not able to pass that cost increase immediately to consumers. So they're kind of stuck between the rock and the hard place here. And so what happens is what has been happening last year. Meat producers see their margins shrink, and they really feel a serious pinch. So what can happen from there? Well, it's painful, so they say, okay, I'm not going to grow as fast as that. But the farmers think the prices of crops were really good, so I'm going to plant more. So what you're going to see is demand for animal feed is going to increase a little less fast, while the supply probably is going to increase faster than that change. So then that's going to ease the price of crops. It's going to improve the margin of the meat producers. So we're going to see, I think, in the future, kind of in terms of margin in the meat industry, a period of squeezes and relief. But the price of food, if you look in the long term, I'm convinced that the price of food are going to increase. And I think, especially within food, the price of animal protein and meat and fish in particular are going to increase much more strongly. But it's not going to happen overnight, but the longer term trend is there. For the crop farmers, I think they're going to be in a slightly more comfortable situation than their meat partners, simply because they're more in a seller's market. There will be some volatility. As long as we don't reach a new equilibrium between animal protein demand and the ability to keep up with that demand, we'll see good years, bad years. It's going to fluctuate. But I would say crop farmers are probably going to have fairly good years ahead. There will be years that will be less buoyant than last year, but you know, it's never on a straight line anyway. So, but altogether, I think it should be a good business to be in. Consumption markets. Until recently, the U.S. agriculture was mostly producing for the domestic market. That's where a lot of, especially in the animal protein, that's where it was going. With the demand of meat outside the U.S., what you see is a lot of new opportunities for producers, American producers, to sell in China, among others, but in India and other parts of the world. In the U.S. market, the situation is going to be different. First, when you consume so many calories and so much meat on a yearly basis, you cannot expect people to eat even more. I think that's already a limiting factor. Another thing is going to happen. The population is aging, so the demand is going down, and people also are more aware about all the health issues, and so they also are going to slow down. What we'll see in the U.S. is a shift from quantity to quality. People are going to be more demanding, and within consumer here, I would add the retail and the food service. They're going to be a lot more demanding. They're going to ask you how you produce, and transparency is going to become something that's going to be a growing topic in the agribusiness in the U.S. People want to know how it's produced, where it's produced, and make sure there is nothing weird in their food, And that's going to create also a lot of new opportunities to deliver certain particular products. So in the future, what I see for farmers is they have to look from the market end. And they have to make a choice. In what kind of market do they want to be in the future? Is it something more of a specialty local, or is it something more in the commodity global, or all sorts of combinations that you can imagine? So there's going to be a lot of opportunities, but there's also going to be quite some change. So they have to really look from the market where the opportunities are. I think in agriculture, like in many other things, we are going to live the end of cheap. When you just look at the chart with all that demand coming from Asia, clearly when the demand increases and you have finite resources that are depleting, it's only logical to expect prices to increase. And that's going to change the economics of energy, the economics of fertilizers, the economics of water, and all the products that are made out of fossil fuel, for instance. That's going to affect not only farms, but it's going to affect also the whole infrastructure, the whole logistics between farm and the final market. And since the price of the input's going to go up, but on the other hand, if you want to maintain social stability in many countries, you have to make sure that the food remains affordable. If the food is not affordable anymore, then it's going to be very serious problems, maybe not quite in the U.S. or in Western Europe, but in a lot of countries, that will be very, very critical. So there is a challenge here for farmers to live with inputs that are going to be more expensive in unit price, so they're going to have to control their cost even more, if I would say, than they already do today. And the only way to do that is to increase efficiency, to have effective techniques, and reduce waste everywhere it's possible. In the future, I don't think it's going to be possible to let any molecule of any kind just go in the environment without doing its work. So every molecule of water, every molecule of fertilizer, every molecule of crop protection product is going to hit the target and be effective. Everything that will not do the job that's expected is pretty much wasted money, and that increases the costs. And, well, we've talked a lot, and of course the yield is the big thing. If you want to also maintain your cost, especially with the price of land going on, you know, the more you produce per acre, then at least you can keep your overhead cost a little under control. So many challenges here to have a profitable business too. So it's a new environment, and we have talked a lot about preserving the future capacity to produce food, and that's, you know, preserving water, preserving soil, preserving all the inputs. Natural conditions, and by that I mean mostly climate change. Well, there are many scenarios. Well, who knows what will really happen? But definitely dramatic climatic events can affect the markets very strongly. And since they're dramatic and totally unpredictable, then you just never know what can hit and when. The price of land, so we touched that. Yes, in the future, who is going to be the owner of the farm? And will the person farming be the owner as well? You don't know. Depending on who owns the farm, who also is going to make decisions in the future about, you know, what should be done and produce on the farm? And also, for a young farmer today, can you afford to buy a farm? That's another question. Looking at young farmers, that's also another question. Average age of the farmer, as we heard earlier, is 58. So if we were to have the same presentation in 2050, are we going to say that the average age of a U.S. farmer is 90-something? I don't know. Who are going to be the farmers of the future? How can we attract new people? I think that's one of the big challenges for the future, to have people who are going to do this work. Because in the end, we need food, so somebody has to produce it. So if people are not interested, are we going to have machines and robots doing it? It's a possibility. I can picture you a very futuristic view of agriculture, and it's not unrealistic at all. There's so much technology being developed in terms of, you know, satellite, GPS, robotics, miniaturization, computer software, sensors. You can now drive tractors without anyone at the steering wheel. You can collect a lot of data on your field, but also in your ecosystem. And since we talk about sustainability, you also need to know what the impact of your farm is over the environment. And you can collect a huge amount of data that the computer could process and give that information in a split second to the farmer or to the machines, maybe directly, to just take the right action and put a little more fertilizer somewhere, take a pest control action somewhere on the farm. And maybe the farmer of the future might be 90 years old and in his office having a number of screens, he can follow what's going on his farms. It's very possible. It can be little drones surveying the fields. There's the little hummingbird that has been developed as a camera in its head, and a spy bird. And basically, you would think it's a bird, but it can pretty much see who is in the street walking and it's developed by one of the companies that already makes the drones for your military. So who knows what's going to come? And because there's so many possibilities in developments of technologies, I think it's very important to be pragmatic when we look at the future. All those discussions about it should be one particular system, it has to be big agriculture, or it has to be small farms, it has to be organic, or it has to be industrial. To me, it's irrelevant. We need to to develop the production systems that are the most efficient in every location. We need to be able to produce what makes the most sense in the best location possible against the lowest cost to produce the highest volume possible to feed the people. So we have to be very open-minded. We have to be very curious. We have to be eager to learn about what is happening because a lot of change is coming. And a crucial role in the future for farmers among themselves, but also for all the suppliers and all the partners, is really helping farmers succeed. Being able to feed the world is really going to come down to that, helping the farmers to be able to meet the demand. And it's going to be a lot about knowledge transfer. It's going to be a lot about learning. When you look at yields, we talk about averages. But if you take the very best, if you take the 5 or 10% best farmers, you're going to be really impressed about what is possible. What can farmers learn from the best? And I think this is the kind of collaboration that's going to have to really learning from each other to help really everybody to kind of level up. I think that's very important. That's going to take some leadership. Some people are going to take the initiative and create this new dynamics. And I think the magic phrase of the future, it's not so much, hey, I have a new product, I think you should try it. It's going to be, what can I do for you? What do you need to succeed? And I'm going to produce it. I'm going to deliver it to you. And I believe that in the future, it's not going to be so much about supplying farmers with products as it's going to be a mix of product and service included. And I think the service is going to take a more dominant role than it has in the past. So as a conclusion, will the world feed 9 billion? From a technical point of view, yes, we can. We can today if we want to. Is that something that we'll be able to do? I hope so. I don't know. It will depend on us. It will depend on our leaders. It will depend on the decisions we make. And there are really two legs for me. And I like to put innovation and leadership together because for me, innovation is more the technical part. It's the technologies, the science that can help you indeed to produce sustainably. But the leadership is also more focused on the human factor. And we need to be able to help and motivate people to do the right thing. The leaders will have to bring the best out in people so that we all work in the right direction. And when it comes to the food and agriculture, there are a lot of organizational and behavioral issues that we need to fix. All the food waste at home, well, that's a particular problem. But 20% of the world food today is wasted between the farm and the market. Just to give an example, in China, it has been estimated that the post-harvest losses of wheat represent an equivalent volume as what Canada exports. And Canada is the second largest exporter in the world of wheat. So we're talking major volumes here that also, if we fix that, is going to make a lot of food a lot more available to markets. And I'll finish just with one sentence just to make you think a little bit about the possibilities. I strongly believe that countries that have a strong agriculture are going to play a very important role in the future. In general, countries that have something that the world needs are going to be powerful and influential.